This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive.
I don't want to rule the world, but it can be said, I think, that Sarah Palin has offered hints of wanting to do just that from time to time. Welcome to the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. Not that Sarah Palin thinks I'm so swell. She blocked me on Twitter some months ago. I have no idea why. Really, what did I ever do to her? Anyway, glad you could join us this afternoon on Pacifica Radio's KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, and 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake, and of course, coast to coast and around the globe on KPFK.org. Glad you could be with us this afternoon. I spoke recently with authors Ken Morris and Jeannie Devon. She may be better known to you folks who follow the progressive blogosphere as AK Muckraker from the Alaska blog The Mudflats. Morris and Devon are the co-authors of Blind Allegiance to Sarah Palin, a memoir of our tumultuous years, which they co-wrote with Frank Bailey, as based on Bailey's years of working for Palin as the campaign administrator for her successful 2006 primary and general election campaigns for governor of Alaska, and then as the deputy director for her transition team. Bailey also later served as the director of the State of Alaska Office of Boards and Commissions during Palin's tenure as governor. The partnership of one disaffected Palin conservative and two progressive authors and bloggers offers a fascinating story of both strange bedfellows and a unique insider look at the bizarre evolution of Sarah Palin from the once popular, if largely unknown outside of her state governor, to the defeated 2008 GOP vice presidential nominee, to the state executive who stunningly quit in the middle of her first term, to reality TV star, best-selling author, Fox News analyst, and GOP superstar still flirting with a run for the 2012 Republican presidential nomination. After a successful career on Wall Street, co-author Ken Morris became an outspoken critic of aspects of the financial system, including the New York Stock Exchange. He's a frequent media contributor on political criticism and financial reform, and the author of the novels Man in the Middle and The Deadly Trade. He currently lives in California. Jeannie Devon, meanwhile, is the founder of Alaska's authoritative and widely read political blog, The Mudflats. That's at themudflats.net. She's a repeated winner of the annual Blogger's Choice Award, a regular contributor to the Huffington Post, and the author of a chapter of Going Rouge, An American Nightmare, a book which competed with Palin's own autobiography, Going Rogue. Jeannie lives in Anchorage. At the heart of the book, Blind Allegiance to Sarah Palin, is the record of tens of thousands of email correspondence, both personal and professional, between Bailey and Palin. Emails which, until the publication of the new book, had never otherwise been released to the public. I'd hoped to speak with all three of the co-authors together, but Frank Bailey was unable to join our recent discussion, unfortunately. But more than the new revelations about Palin, I was interested in what brought this odd mix of folks together to work on this book in secret, as they did for several months, until a manuscript of the book was released on the internet several months before its official publication this past spring. That's where I begin my conversation with Ken Morris and Jeannie Devon. Ken, tell me how you got involved with Frank Bailey, and then we'll get to the point of how Jeannie came into the picture.
I had heard that Frank Bailey had agreed to write a book with two women in San Diego, one of whom he had gone to college with, and they announced this deal, and it's going to be called The Hatchet Man, Sarah Palin's Hatchet Man, and it became quite a story, and there was a lot of excitement amongst Alaskans, and it spread, and people were anticipating the book, and then it just ended for reasons that to this day I don't really even know why. But when I heard that, I had written some pieces for Jeannie in the past, and then when I heard about this book falling apart, I contacted Jeannie. I said, do you have any way to get me in touch with Frank Bailey?
Mm-hmm.
And she had an indirect contact and did so, and Frank was not aware it was Jeannie. We exchanged emails. I told him my vision of the book, and it jived with his, and we began to write. And about a month into it, I told Frank at the time, much to his dismay, that I wanted to bring Jeannie on the project because my expertise in Alaska was woefully low, and I needed really boots on the ground and somebody who knew the politics really inside and out, and that was Jeannie Devin.
And before we get to Jeannie on that point, did you approach Frank and say, look, I'm a progressive, but I want to help you get this this book out. I'm your old enemy, but I want to help you get it out?
Well, I was, of course, never Frank's enemy, except maybe on the other side of the political fence. But I made no bones about it. I sent him all of the pieces I had written on Sarah Palin, all the challenges and why I had done it, and how I was dismayed that this woman held herself up as a political leader, yet we couldn't find word one about what really she thought.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I assumed she had thoughts on matters that she clearly did not. So no, there was no pretense whatsoever, but I sent him my then unpublished manuscript for a novel and writing style and pieces, and he was well aware of everything. And but the interesting thing was, when I brought up Jeannie Devin's name, he said no way, and his wife said no way.
Ooh.
That's not going to happen.
Ooh.
And I said, fine, it's not going to happen, then you know what, I'm off, because I just don't have the expertise in Alaska to do this. And I said, go meet her for coffee. And as we like to say, on cup two of coffee, they realized they had more in common, at least in terms of their vision as opposed to their politics. And I would say, I don't think I'm misspeaking when I say that Jeannie and Frank have become very close. And that's not politically, but sort of personally, and
uh-huh.
as have all three of us.
Jeannie Devin, had you known about Frank Bailey? Did you know who he was since he was working for Palin? Were you aware of his existence before this entire book episode came about?
Well, Frank was definitely at the heart of the whole Troopergate scandal, if you remember that.
Uh-huh.
He was the Palin aide who was taped calling the Alaska State Troopers and talking about how, you know, Sarah and Todd are scratching their heads and they can't figure out why the ex-brother-in-law hasn't been fired and he's a bad trooper. And, you know, Sarah Palin had come out publicly and said that no member of her staff or her family had ever put pressure on anyone to get rid of this sort of ne'er-do-well brother-in-law who was still a trooper. And then, of course, this tape came out shortly thereafter, and she had egg on her face, and Frank got kind of thrown under the bus and you know, given the blame for all of that. So so I had known of Frank for sure, and I had described him as the second most infamous Frank in Alaska politics, the first, of course, being Frank Murkowski, who was governor before
yes.
Sarah Palin,
right.
and corrupt to the bone.
Right.
And so I had called him that, and when Frank had actually called me for coffee, he called me at work, and I
mm-hmm.
answered the phone. He said, is this Jeannie Devin? I said, yes, it is. And he said, hey, this is the second most infamous Frank in Alaska politics.
So they had been paying attention.
He had been paying attention.
Yeah.
He had read what I had written. And was able to laugh at it, and we had a really great great conversation.
So at the coffee, what happened? How did you convince him that he should let you aboard this book project?
Well, I should say, before I answer that, that I had no idea that any of that had been going on behind the scenes.
Oh, really?
And Ken had just said, yeah, Frank will have coffee with you, sure. And so I wasn't aware, which was actually a merciful thing, because I probably would have been a little more nervous about it than I was. But so I agreed to go have have coffee with Frank, and we started talking. And I think the thing that made him feel at ease about me being on the project, because our politics are pretty much 180 degrees apart, was the fact that I mentioned a couple times that I had called out the bad behavior of legislators who were members of my own party. And we found that we had sort of a common distaste for disingenuous politicians who say one thing and do another, regardless of which side of the aisle that they're on, and a respect for integrity, even if we don't believe in the same policies. And so we found that common ground and hit it off, and he felt comfortable with me, and I felt comfortable with him.
And you guys haven't gotten into political arguments in the process of writing this book, which you did in secret for months, and I had no idea. But were you guys able to get along politically? Did that sort of thing ever come up in the process?
You know, I think Frank and I were both very respectful of the fact that we were working together on the project, yet had differing opinions. And, you know, he would sort of mention some things kind of tiptoeing around, and I would sort of do the same. And we really strove to find areas where we could have common ground.
You're listening to my interview with Jeannie Devon and Ken Morris, co-authors with Frank Bailey of Blind Allegiance to Sarah Palin, a memoir of our tumultuous years together based on tens of thousands of emails between Bailey and Palin, who were very close for several years. I wondered what, if any, new insights the two progressives in this strange team may have gained, since both of these two guys have long been opponents of Sarah Palin, even when they joined up with Frank Bailey to write this book about her. We'll start with Ken here. Since you guys are both progressives and you're plowing through these emails back and forth between her and Frank Bailey, not the ones that were released or finally by the state, but these private emails between Frank and her, what did you learn? What kind of insight did you gain on Sarah Palin in reading these emails that you might not have before? What did you learn from reading these, Ken Morris?
Well, I would say number one, it's a matter of degrees. You have to realize that Jeannie and I, the first 6 months that we were on this project was really just going through the emails and classifying them. And there was it was like a progressive disease, as far as I'm concerned, to watch this process unfold from, and the book sort of goes through that, where it starts with this real message of hope, where everybody is just so enthusiastic about what they're doing. They're so full of hope and almost sort of high school election type of enthusiasm.
And that's before she became, that's while she was still Wasilla Mayor, before
well,
she became
is,
governor?
This is long after Wasilla Mayor, but this is when she's announced that she's going to run for governor, and Frank signs on. And it really was very much like a glorified high school election, with all the enthusiasm and the planting of signs across the state, and everybody just immersed in it. You began, though, through the emails to see this sort of creeping, strange behavior that that sort of were dark clouds, and we knew reading the emails it was going to get worse even without talking to Frank, because we just spent all this time going through them. And as we got chronologically, you get then to 2009 when she comes back after the unsuccessful McCain campaign, and it had gone to the point where it was a full-blown disaster, where her ability to focus on government was zero. She was a whale in a non-existent pond. She was so big. And the vendettas, which had always been a creeping theme throughout her campaign and administration, became, you know, and I would say, and I'm not a psychologist, but it certainly is something I think you could describe as pathological. And, you know, I'm as a book writer, a novelist, and this memoir lent itself to that. But what was the challenge for me in putting the story together, which was the shocking part in 2009 in particular, was to take all of the subplots, the 15 or 20 vendettas that were going on simultaneously, and weave them into a way, into a narrative that wasn't, quite frankly, mind-blowing and confusing. It was an incredible, and I happened to have drawn the short straw and was the one classifying those 09 emails while Gene finished up 08. And I got tired. I couldn't open them. I had to take breaks, because every time I opened a new one, it was a new attack on a new person, oftentimes for simply doing nothing.
So you could actually see the the sort of change in her character, the darkening of her character over the years and the progression of these emails?
I would say absolutely. And it's not that her character necessarily changed, but I think the pressures and the sort of stimulus around her and then her vision of herself in the world grew to such a point where she had a lot of attention. And the more attention that came to her, the more she perceived these forces of evil around her, evildoers, liars. I mean, her favorite word, quite frankly, I think was, Jeannie confirmed, I think was the word, he's a liar, liar, liar. And it had no relationship to whether someone was telling the truth or not. It had to do with whether her feelings were hurt or she got angry.
Jeannie, you had been writing about Palin in great detail and trying to sort of divine her character through her comments, through whatever, you know, emails you were able to get at for all of these years. Suddenly you get this, you know, this bevy of tens of thousands of emails. What insight did you get, and did you find that the characterization that you had of her in your mind was the characterization that you saw when she was, you know, thought she was speaking in private to her aides?
It wasn't a complete shock to me because, you know, having been in Alaska and kind of watching the deterioration of her governorship, seeing her out on the campaign trail, seeing how quickly she was willing to become what John McCain wanted her to be for the sake of her own fame, her own political ambition, and eventually her own ability to earn money. So I wasn't completely shocked, but the thing that really surprised me was the extent to which these things that would come out of her periodically really did occupy her mind, the extent to which the governorship of the state and running the day-to-day show really took a backseat in most cases to these really strange, you know, vendettas against radio show hosts and vendettas against the president of the Senate and vendettas against, you know, anybody that really that crossed her. So it was more of what I already knew, and to a greater degree. And there were certain things that she had done in office that we all suspected in Alaska, including an illegal coordination with the Republican Governors Association in putting together some campaign ads. You know, this had floated around Alaska, and her detractors were sure that she had, you know, broken this law, and she denied it. And, of course, she had. And so reading through stuff like that was very much a vindication of things that we believed but were never able to prove.
And that was actually going to be my next question, because I know that they talked that you talk in the book about the coordination. That is illegal in violation of campaign rules. That was the 2006 gubernatorial campaign, correct?
Yes.
Is there evidence in those emails, in those conversations, that in fact they did break the law? And if so, is this still being pursued? By law enforcement, I mean to say.
Well, yeah, actually, I believe there's a statute of limitations on the complaints of 1 year. I think that's what it is. So there in all likelihood will be nothing, no legal ramifications.
1 year? That's it?
I believe so, and I don't want to misspeak, but I do believe I've read that. Mm-hmm. And I doubt, though, there'll be any sort of ramifications at this late date. However, we have, you know, Frank's story. We had circumstantial emails, and we knew the story to be true. But interestingly, the one part of the, and our, as you were probably aware, our manuscript got leaked in February, the media took it apart. And the one thing that our detractors pointed out was that there was no quote unquote smoking gun email, even though the evidence was very strong and we knew it to be true. But lo and behold, what happened in the interim of the leak and the final publication is an individual who was actually there at the filming, who was being paid by the RGA, came forward and gave us positive confirmation of every single word, plus provided additional details that we have in the book to the claims.
And this person was at the filming of one of these commercials, one of these spots?
Was at the filming of the commercials, of the tapes that were used in the commercials, spoke with Sarah Palin, was at a filming the next day that Frank was unaware of because he hadn't been there, and filled in and did the entire details and So gave us confirmation that what Frank said was 100% accurate, and then filled in some other interesting details that padded the story. And as I say, interestingly, since then, the tactic hasn't been to say there's no smoking gun because we produced a smoking gun.
Right.
The tactic has been to ignore the issue altogether. And frustratingly for us, not one news agency, certainly not Fox, of course, has gone to her to ask her the obvious question, did you violate campaign finance law and did you lie about it? And the answer, of course, is yes, and the proof is in the book.
And, of course, nobody asked her that because she doesn't talk to anybody at this point other than Fox and other than in these scrums around her bus tour. And, you know, she's telling us the history of Paul Revere very accurately. Other than that, she doesn't get any questions, which leads me to the next question. Can she, I'll ask each of you, if you think she is going to run, if she is going to get into this race, and if so, the presidential race I'm talking about, and if so, how can she run a campaign without answering any questions of the media other than Fox News?
My guess, and I still hold to this, we'll see, I could completely be wrong, mm-hmm. I think that she will. I think that she's going to run, and I don't think that it does or has to make sense in our world. I think that she surrounds herself with a very small group, usually, of folks whose benefit it is to have her run, who enjoy riding her coattails, telling her what she wants to hear. I also think, to a certain extent, that she believes, remember back in 08 when she was saying that God opened the door,
uh-huh.
and she was just going to step through?
Right.
Because I think that, you know, you or I or a sensible, rational person, given Palin's experience in office, giving her knowledge of the world, if we had been asked to run as John McCain's running mate as vice president,
yeah.
we probably would have said, you know, thanks but no thanks. Come back to me, whoever's the candidate, in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I know that this is a possibility, I really need to put my shoulder to the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I need to learn about world affairs. I need to become savvy on matters outside of Alaska. But of course she didn't, because the opportunity presented itself and she felt an obligation, and it fit her, you know, her own narcissism to go ahead and leap into that. So she may not run. There may be extenuating circumstances that none of us know about that keep her from doing that, but I can't see her volunteering to become irrelevant. I think she enjoys the limelight too much, and I have a feeling that she will. But again, I could be wrong.
Just jump in if I could, because you asked about specifically how can she do it without talking to the media,
mm-hmm.
and it's certainly a tricky process, but she's continuing to play off this I do it a different way mavericky thing, number one, and number two, it's a whole new world with Citizens United, and here in the hotel we're staying in, as we speak right now, the film The Undefeated is being played to a very, I assume, a very large crowd of conservatives in this hotel.
Right-wingers, not conservatives, but that's the right-wing documentary about Sarah Palin.
Correct. So you have on that one side, that's the bolster image side, and on the other side, we have now a world of almost unrestricted type of swift boating. So, you know, I think that there is a case to be made that she could be successful with 30% approval rating, so long as under Citizens United enough money went out to cause her candidate to have a 28% approval rating.
So
I think that would be her strategy.
And the sense is, so your sense, Ken, is that she may get in as well.
I think there's no question she may get in. Jeannie and I were talking about this over dinner tonight, and I would make the claim if she does, she'll quit, because she quits everything. but she still might make a run because it makes sense for her ego, makes sense probably for her pocketbook.
Way up north, way up north, north to Alaska, go north, bless your soul. North to Alaska, go north, the rush is on.
I was thinking with The authors of Blind Allegiance to Sarah Palin, A Memoir of Our Tumultuous Years. The co-authors to Frank Bailey, who was Palin's campaign administrator for many years. The co-authors, Ken Morris and Jeannie Devon of themudflats.net, join us here. Got a couple of callers. Let me see if I can get in these callers, guys. Lee in Los Angeles, what is your question for Jeannie Devon and Ken Morris?
Hey, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
I will leave the country if she holds any political office again.
Can I come?
I swear to you, I will. I will live in Spain. But my question is, watching the Republican debate circus, I was mildly surprised by Michelle Bachmann, and I wondered in your esteemed opinions if you guys think Bachmann's kind of taking the baton and Palin will now go back to Stupidville and reign again. What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I don't think that Bachmann will be a large consideration for Sarah Palin. I think Jeannie hit the nail right on the head that Sarah is looking to see if God opens the door. And I think the first big push open for that door was when Huckabee dropped out, a man who, by the way, she preferred over McCain during the primaries. So I kind of think that that's not going to happen. But you know, one thing I want to say about this book is it's not just about Sarah Palin. It really is about the process. And I have come to believe that the Republican Party is the party of whack-a-mole. And if you can whack Sarah down, Bachmann will pop up. And if you whack her down, you're going to get Donald Trump popping up. And we really have to understand the process. And I think our book does a good job of pointing that out. We sort of lose the message because Palin is kind of central casting for interest. But, you know, there's a bigger message, and the media needs to do a better job, and voters do as well.
You guys certainly have a better, more of an insight to Sarah Palin than I do, especially after going through 60,000 of her emails. But I suspect when I watched that New Hampshire debate the other day, I thought it must be driving her crazy that Michelle Bachmann is getting that kind of attention. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it must drive her crazy. Jeannie, any final thoughts? And what other secret books are you currently working on and not telling anybody about?
I am not working on a secret book. You can break that story.
I can't. No secret books. Okay. One of the questions I wanted to ask Frank was, why the hell over on Twitter Sarah Palin blocked me? I'm the Brad blog over on Twitter, by the way, but I still don't know why. Jeannie, are you blocked by Sarah Palin on the Twitters?
I am not.
Well, what the hell? What's
I don't
up
know.
With that?
You're just a big meanie.
I am. I guess so. I don't know what. I don't understand. Anyway, okay.
Wear it like a badge.
Yeah, I will. I will indeed. Sarah Palin, USA. She blocked me, turned me away. Okay, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Go out and buy this interesting book, Blind Allegiance to Sarah Palin, by Frank Bailey with Ken Morris and Jeannie Devon of themudflats.net. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brad.
All right, guys. That's the Bradcast for this week. I'm Brad Friedman. My thanks again to Jeannie Devon and Ken Morris. Also, my thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and our engineer, G. I'm Brad Friedman. Please join us next week, same Brad time, same Brad channel. Until then, we'll see you at bradblog.com.